Srimad Bhagavatam is set up in 9 cantos to describe the omnipotence and greatness of God and the various progenitors and creation before coming to the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, discussing Krishna's leelas. So the basic idea Shukadeva is trying to describe is that we need to understand the Aishwarya and omnipotence and power of the Lord before we enter into His intimate human-like leelas. Otherwise, we'll misconstrue them to be ordinary or mundane. Avajanati mamura marasham tanamashita. Krishna says in Gita that Avajanati mamudha, the fools deride me when I descend in human form. They're thinking I'm like them, but my body is totally transcendental, such as ananda vigraha. So I get that basis, foundation. It's very important to learn about Krishna's greatness. So that's why different cantos of Bhagavatam is called creation, Srishti Tattva, creation. All different sections are there. Dynasties and creation. So it's very important to learn about Krishna's greatness as the creator of the material world before one speaks about his transcendental pastimes in Vrindavan. So that's why Shukadeva begins by describing the greatness of Krishna. So then later, finally, after 9 cantos of hearing about dynasties and devotees and incarnations and avatars, Das Avatar and all the great Shaktivesha avatars of the Lord, like Prithu and Narada and Parasaram, Shukadeva enters the 10th canto. So by the time we get to the 10th canto and read Krishna's pastimes, Vrindavan pastimes, no one will mistake them for something mundane, although they appear to parallel or be very similar to human activities. Krishna's pastimes are displays of his Swarup Shakti, his Antaranga Shakti, his spiritual potency, his Braja Leela. But his external potential works, all this creation is done by the Purusha avatars. Kanarnarnava Shai Vishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and Shirdakshai Vishnu. Sometimes Kanarnarnava Shai. Shai means sleeping, Arnava means ocean, Karan means cause. Sleeping on the causal ocean is Mahavishnu. And from his navel comes Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and from the navel of Garbhadakshai Vishnu comes the Lord Brahma, sitting on a lotus, and then Shirdakshai Vishnu expands from Garbhadakshai Vishnu. So Vishnu Chakravartipad, he explains in his purport to text 10, second canto of chapter 4, he advises that sincere Vaishnavas, they should not be interested in only hearing Krishna's Rasa Leela, but they should be keenly interested in all his pastimes and his features of the Purusha avatars in connection with Srishti Tattva, creational functions, following the example of Maharaj Parikshit, the ideal disciple, and Shukadeva Goswami, the ideal spiritual master. So what we have is Shukadeva is a Shiksha Guru, Maharaj Parikshit, and he has 7 days to learn the essential teachings of life. So he does it in 7 days. When you go, someone is a doctor, wants to become a doctor, they enroll in a college, and all the courses you study in college today to become a doctor are the same courses that were studied 10 years ago by someone of your predecessors who became doctors. They went to the same school and studied with, in many cases, the same teachers and the same subjects, and they graduated and became qualified, certified doctors. So that's teacher-student relationship in the medical college. The relationship between guru and shishya is exemplified in Bhagavatam. Maharaj Parikshit is the ideal shishya. He controlled his senses. Vachavegam, Anasakotavegam, Jivavegam, Urapastavegam. Gave up all eating and sleeping. Didn't even sleep for 7 days, nor eat nor drink any water. That's really sense-controlled. And he was totally eager to hear from his guru and had many, many relevant and pertinent questions. He asked questions like, what should one hear about, meditate on, remember who's about to die? like himself. And that's all of us. And then Shukadeva Goswami said he should hear about Krishna and serve Krishna. This is the topmost dharma. So this is the example that Shukadeva Goswami didn't say, listen, you only have 7 days to live. Now I'm gonna give you the nectar. I'm gonna go right into Brajlila and tell you all about Brajlila. But he did everything in a very systematic way. 7 days, 18,000 verses. When we have a Bhagavatam class, it's one verse a day. Once in Los Angeles, Prabhupada said, so we have plenty of reading matter. Now, if we discuss one verse like this, we sit here together, guru and disciples, and we discuss from all angles of vision one verse from the Bhagavad Gita, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, following the idea of Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, then how long will it take us to finish the Srimad Bhagavatam, going through in this fashion, one verse by one verse? And the devotees, they say, well, Prabhupada, there's 18,000 verses, and there's 365 days in a year. It'll take about 50 years. Of course, when Prabhupada asked this question, how long it would take to complete the Bhagavatam, it was in 1976, so he was 80 years old at the time. So 80 and 50, it means Prabhupada would be 130 years old. That would be great if Prabhupada lived that long with us. It would have been wonderful. It's already 30 years, 31 years have passed since he left this world, entered Nityadham, Nityalila of Radha Govinda. But anyway, Prabhupada laughed and said, yes, so we have no shortage of reading matter. We have something to keep us busy for 50 years. So that 50 years was compressed into 7 days. Poor Parikshit Maharaj, he heard the entire Bhagavatam and understood it all in 7 days. So we're hearing for 7 years and 20 years and 50 years and so many years and still we're not understanding. So the hearing depends on the level of our consciousness, how much, what we can hear, what we can understand. So those who are not completely free from the Lord's clutches of the Lord's external energy, they should hear regularly about the Lord's activities in relation with the external energy. They should not foolishly jump up to the activities of the internal energy, Sarup Shakti Yoga Maya, falsely attracted by the Lord's internal potential activities, like His Rasalila. Cheap reciters of the Bhagavatam are very much enthusiastic about the Lord's internal potential activities. And pseudo-devotees absorbed in material sense enjoyment falsely jump to the stage of liberated souls and thus fall down deeply into the clutches of external energy. Shiva Goswami says in Sundarbas that if one reads about Krishna's intimate pastimes and he has male transformations, he's saying male transformations, I guess if a woman reads also, it would mean sex disturbance or sex agitation. Male transformations, that's his term he used in Sanskrit, then one should not read such pastimes because his mind is too infected by lust and envy of Krishna. And one friend used to say, don't try to put your face on Krishna's. Very interesting phrase. Don't try to put your face on Krishna's. In other words, you read about Krishna enjoying with Radharani and the gopis and some Leela Granth, or even Krishna, even the Krishna book or 10th canto Bhagavatam, Rasad Leela. Then you put your face, yes, I'm there, I'm enjoying. And this is inciting me, this description of Krishna's intimacy with the Vrajagopis is inciting me to also enjoy and inflaming my passion for lusty behavior, lusty conduct. So then one should desist and stop such reading. It is not sufficient. Anartha Nivritti has not taken place. At least we can read the 10th canto, read the Krishna book, Prabhupada said we can read every day. Don't dwell in any particular one section, just one by one. Vrindavan Leela, Mathura Leela, Dwarka Leela, then back again to Gokul Leela, Janam Leela, then I go through, but everyone has to measure their own response to it. Some people think they can hear about Krishna's pastimes only means to hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. And they think that Govardhan Leela has nothing to do with the Lord's, or that they want to read the Govardhan Leela or the Gopi Leela. They have no interest in the expansions of the Lord and the Purusha avatars and the pastimes of creation, maintenance, annihilation. This is Srishti Leela and Pralaya Leela and maintenance. A pure devotee knows there is no difference between the pastimes of the Lord, either in Ras Leela or in creation, maintenance, and destruction. Descriptions of Krishna as the Purusha avatars are meant for persons who are in the clutches of Maya. Topics like Ras Leela are meant for the liberated souls and not for conditioned souls. The conditioned souls therefore must hear with appreciation and devotion the Lord's pastimes in relationship with the external energy. As such, these acts are as good as hearing Ras Leela in the liberated stage. A conditioned soul should not imitate the activities of liberated souls. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never indulged in hearing Ras Leela with ordinary men. So the Bhagavatam is the science of God, and the first 9 cantos are preparation. That's like in medical school, you don't immediately start doing surgery on people. There's so much preparation, so much foundation, so much knowledge, so much theory, knowledge, principles, familiarity with the human body and all the organ systems, and then dissection of dead bodies and seeing films and movies and so much education, and finally maybe even computer. In the West they have computer surgery where they have programs on the computer, you can do surgery on the computer like virtual reality. So you get quite highly trained by sophisticated educational techniques. And then finally, after all that, you're let loose as an apprentice in some hospital under some guide, senior guides. And then finally, you may get certified to practice on your own. So this is the 10th canto. It's 9 cantos of Bhagavatam or the certification. One gets certified by systematically studying the 9 cantos. So Prabhupada explains that a pure devotee of the Lord should begin reading or hearing Bhagavatam from the very beginning, not from the 10th canto. This is Prabhupada's purport to 2753. Although it's interesting Prabhupada's saying this because he's, 2 things are going on at once. He's saying pure devotees begin hearing Bhagavatam from the very beginning, first canto. But at the same time, Prabhupada himself, the very first books, very, very first books he gave us, the very first books he brought to America were the first canto Bhagavatam, which he translated in Radhadamodar Temple from 1962 to 1965 in 3 volumes. And he brought that with him, 200 sets, 600 books he bought in 3 trunks on the Jaladuta. He sold the first one in Boston Harbor to the captain for $20. So when Prabhupada came to New York, although the biography says he had 40 rupees, he actually had $20 plus 40 rupees. That's right there in the same Leelamrita. It's very funny. If you look closely, you can see. The first Jaladuta went to Boston and stayed one night or something and unloaded some cargo, then went to New York, and that's where Prabhupada disembarked the boat. And he had already sold in Boston 3 volumes for $20. $20 in 1965 was a fair amount of money. So Prabhupada arrived in New York, and then he went to Butler, Pennsylvania. And so when he came to New York and started his mission, he was selling the Bhagavatam. And then shortly after that, he produced the Isopanishad and teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Nectar Devotion and Krishna Book. They all came out within 2 or 3 years. So Prabhupada's basic reading formula was for us to every day read Krishna Book, which is 10th canto Bhagavatam, and every day read first canto. Because first canto was there for a few years, and second canto came out, but I think 10th canto Krishna Book came out before second canto. So right from the very, very beginning of ISKCON, first canto Bhagavatam was there. and then Krishna book, 1969. So Prabhupada wanted us, and in fact we did. It was a practice in all the temples. We'd read the Krishna book every night. So it's two things. We should hear the Krishna book every night and in a regular way from with Prabhupada's purports, the Krishna book. And then we should go through the Bhagavatam, beginning with the first canto, and gradually, after so many months, whatever, we'll come to the 10th canto. One of our students in Delhi, it's their mother is reading the Bhagavatam. She's retired. And in 6 months, she's read 11 cantos already. In 4 months or something. She's an avid reader, and she was a teacher in school before. And she's already read, I think, 11, she's on the 11th canto now. So then she really relishes the book. So this is the way. It doesn't take so long if one applies themselves to reading the Bhagavatam. It's interesting when one begins the 10th canto after the long sojourn through the 9 cantos and the ensuing anartanivrti that takes place, along with Guru Seva and chanting the holy name and Vaishnava Seva, and developing all the qualities of a surrendered and sincere Vaishnava. When he enters the 10th canto, even then in the 10th canto, although it's Krishna's intimate leelas of his yoga maya potency, Surup Shakti, with his parishads, and although some demons are there, but before I actually get to the Ras Leela, there's a lot of leelas come before that. The most intimate display of Krishna's Surup Shakti, yoga maya, is his Ras Leela with the gopis. And kissing and embracing and touching their thighs and breasts and all very intimate descriptions are there. But that doesn't come till chapter 29. There's 29 chapters in the 10th canto preceding that, beginning with Krishna's birth. Janma karma chame divyam evam yovati tapvata tyaktvam deham punarjanma naiti mamati sorjana. Krishna tells Arjuna in Gita 4:9 that if you understand my transcendental birth and transcendental activities, then you don't take another birth. You become self-realized. So transcendental activities means Srishti, Leela, Pralaya, maintenance, all these things in the 9th cantos. And then birth means first Leela of the 10th canto is all about Krishna's birth. And Mathura in the prison, Devaki. But then even beginning there with his birth and the 6 children that had miscarriages or rather they were killed by The first six children of Devaki and Vasudeva were killed by the vicious tyrant, Kansa. And the 7th child appeared to be a miscarriage. Balaram was transferred to Rohini's womb by Yogamaya. And the 8th child was Krishna, Vasudeva Krishna. He was taken to Gokul by Vasudeva. And he returned with Yogamaya. Krishna's sister, born of Yashoda, in exchange for Krishna. So then Kamsa came, and the 8th child was supposed to be a boy that was going to kill him, and it was a girl. So he was a little perplexed by that. He tried to kill her anyway, and she manifested in his hands. Yogamaya became Mahamaya, Durga, and threatened to kill him. He became humbled and fell to his knees and begged for forgiveness. And she told him that the source of his death was already born elsewhere. So then he immediately started to kill all the children and babies born in Brajmandal and also cows, harassing all the Brahmins, trying to find where that Krishna was and is, to kill him. So this birth, these 6 children, right beginning with this birth, Leela represents anarthas, anartha-nivrti, nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhav, and Prem. To really understand Krishna's intimate Leela with the gopis, one should be on the level of Ruchi, maybe on Nishta. Otherwise, one can. Nishta, what is Nishta? Lord Chaitanya explains, what is the level of Nishta? Nishta is when one is always absorbed in chanting Hare Krishna, exhibiting the 4 qualities. This is Nishta. So nishta means trinada pisa nichena. This is nishta, describing nishta. Utmost humility and respect for everyone. and tolerance like a tree, and not expecting any honor from anyone, and honoring all others according to their position and relationship with one. So that's nishta. So that's, even that's, and that's kirtaniya sadhari. When one is a nishta, he's always chanting Krishna's glories. Beyond that is ruchi, kata ruchi, nam ruchi, where one actually has a taste for Krishna's service. And then one can, when one reads Krishna Leela, then one will enter safely, but not without chance for committing aparad. And he can somewhat dwell on Krishna's leelas in Vrindavan at the level of ruchi and higher levels of asakti, obviously, and bhav and prem. So in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, before we get to the Rasa Leela, the beginning of the 10th canto, there are all these chapters about killing demons and annihilating the pride of demigods. So all these are, there's gross demoniac qualities and subtle demoniac qualities. So gross demoniac qualities are lust, anger, greed, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, matsarya. These are gross material qualities and gross anarthas. But then subtle anarthas are lobh, pooja, and pratishtha. So desire for puja, desire for honor, distinction, pride, pratishtata. So that's also defeated before you get to the 10th canto. Before you get to Krishna's Rasa Leela, or intimate Yogamaya, Swarup Shakti pastimes with his confidants, the gopis, his beloved damsels of Braj, one has to get free from all these anarthas. So these different demons that Krishna subjugates and vanquishes, they represent these anarthas, impediments and obstacles to Braj Bhajan. And that's described in my Art of Chanting, my Appreciating Vrindavan book, and also Art of Chanting, maybe. It's taken from Krishna Samhita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He describes that these different demons represent different anarthas and unwanted qualities within us. But then Krishna vanquishes not only demons, but he vanquishes the subtle anarthas represented by various demigods, like Indra. Indra was very proud, pratishta. And Brahma was bimohan, illusion. Kam, krodh, lobh, moha. So moha is also there. Kam, krodh, lobh, that's all sensual bodily anarthas. And kam, krodh, lobh, moha, matsarya, and matsarya. So five out of six are all centered on the body. And moha is like in the mind, illusion. So Brahma was bewildered, didn't understand the identity. So the inability to accept Krishna as God and the inability to identify and recognize the supremacy of Krishna above Vishnu or any other demigod is moha, is illusion. And Brahma was subject to that, so he was defeated. So that has to be removed, that type of vimohan, or mohan, has to be eliminated from our consciousness in order to accept the supremacy of Krishna and enter into his sweet dealings with the gopis, or even the gopas. Brahma couldn't understand his dealings with the gopas. And he was bewildered at that point. And above Sakya Rasa is Vatsalya Rasa, above Vatsalya Rasa is Madhurya Rasa. So he couldn't transit understanding of Krishna's dealings with the Sakas, what to speak of Yashoda and Nanda. The gopis is inconceivable. So then demigods are not demons, they're suras, they're devotees. But they also represent anarthas too, on this little platform. So these are all removed. They're all humiliated or defeated or vanquished or killed by Krishna's intervention, by Krishna's arrangement. In the first so many chapters of the Bhagavatam preceding the Rasa Leela in 10th canto. So these are all, even when one crosses the 9 cantos, and Prabhupada said after reading the 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam, one should be self-realized. He should become, by the sincere study of the 9 cantos of Bhagavatam, one will become a self-realized soul. And then he can approach the 10th canto. But even when you approach the 10th canto, you have to get free from so many things that are obstacles of Braja Bhajan and understanding Krishna's intimacy. Even Brahma couldn't understand. He has 4 heads. We only have 1. And he's Adikavi. He's the original intelligent person created by Vishnu. So only by mercy we can understand, by Guru's mercy. And this is some points about entering Krishna's Leela. and understanding Krishna's Leela is based. In other words, the palace of Madhurya is built on the foundation of Aishwarya. So a strong foundation and you can make a very beautiful palace. So it's very beautiful and attractive, the Madhurya Leela of Krishna, but it must be built and based on a strong foundation of Aishwarya, understanding the greatness and grandeur of Krishna. And that's the whole purpose of the nine cantos of the Bhagavatam.